das blaue Nebelland, nach den fernen Triften sehend, wo ich dich, Geliebte, fand.
Auf dem Hügel sitz ich spähend. I sit on the hill, gazing into the blue expanse of sky, searching the far-off mists to see where I can find you, my beloved. By the time that Ludwig van Beethoven composed this music, the first song in his groundbreaking cycle of six conjoined settings of poems that he called An die ferne Geliebte, to the distant beloved, written in 1816, he was by now totally deaf. He could hear nothing whatsoever. Some people have believed that the complete isolation from the world that Beethoven's deafness brought to him was one contributing factor, not the only one by any means, but an important one, as to how it was that he turned musical tradition upside down with such unprecedented revolutionary innovations in form, sound, rhythm, and tonality. His symphonies, sonatas, and string quartets changed the face of classical music forever, and they exerted a colossal influence on the remainder of the 19th century, indeed right up until the 20th century. But what about his songs? Not so many people think of songs when Beethoven's name is mentioned, and yet he composed around 250 of them among his total catalogued output of 722 works. So that's more than a third of his complete oeuvre. And in fact, it's a much higher ratio than the sum of his symphonies, sonatas, and quartets. Of course, the songs are nearly all much shorter works, and as a whole collection, they did not influence the course of music in the way that his other compositions did. However, in this two-part feature, we're going to hear first from the esteemed song accompanist and vocal scholar and author Graham Johnson, and then in the second part from the distinguished tenor Ian Bostridge and the prize-winning young mezzo-soprano Natalie Perez, how Beethoven most certainly did have a crucially innovative role in the historical development of the German Lied. That's the German art song. And not just with An die ferne Geliebte, which was the first ever set of songs composed as a continuous cycle. As Graham Johnson now explains, Beethoven's vital achievement in Lieder is sometimes overlooked in the context not only of the Lied's chronology, but also of the composer's overall oeuvre.
I think Ludwig van Beethoven is a much more important figure in the world of song than people generally realise. Of course, there's been a feeling, because he happened to have a younger contemporary called Franz Schubert, who swept the board in terms of lyricism and communicative ability with Lieder. In fact, Schubert lived in the same town as Beethoven and actually only knew in his entire life 18 months when Beethoven wasn't standing over his shoulder as a towering figure. But because Schubert comes so close to Beethoven chronologically, there's been a tendency to bow, as always, to Beethoven in terms of his symphonic work, his chamber music and so on, and to reserve a certain area of awe and love and admiration for Schubert in a field where Beethoven was said not to have excelled. There have been all sorts of reasons given for this, mainly that Beethoven maybe simply didn't understand writing for the voice, that he was less interested in singers, that he was clumsier when it came to vocal understanding. He was certainly a very different personality, and I've sometimes felt that he wasn't very good at yielding, so he doesn't yield to the poem as Schubert often does. He bends the poem to his will, finds poems that suit his circumstances and his frame of mind. Mind you, it's my theory that many composers do that at certain times of their lives, the poetry reflecting their own inner crises and feelings and being a very welcome antidote to being depressed about their own circumstances. Poetry serves that purpose for many people and for composers. But Beethoven had a very special relationship with song, in the sense that although he didn't have Schubert's supreme identification and partnership with literature, the written word was important to him. Poetry was important to him. People with deep feeling were important to him. And I think the relationship with Goethe, and we must remember that, of course, Schubert also had a fantastic and very special relationship with Goethe, although he never met that poet. The relationship with Goethe illustrates that Beethoven was attracted fairly early on to a poet who was exceptional. Now, we know that Schubert encountered Gretchen am Spinnrader in 1814 and set the song that became a touchstone for the history of Lieder, a song that combined piano and voice in an extraordinarily new and innovative way. Wonderful music, many people regard that as a birth point for the Lied. But what fewer people realise is that Beethoven, in his 20s, in his middle 20s, when he was already living as a young man in Vienna, encountered some of the same poems that Schubert knew, but something like 19 years earlier. He had, I would expect, the volume I have in my hand here, which is Goethe's Schriften, the 8th volume, which is the first printing of Goethe's poems in the second half of the volume. And this came out in 1789 in Leipzig, and there's no doubt that Beethoven had a copy of this volume of poetry. And he, in 1796, attempted to set a number of poems. And I think that's what's extraordinary. He attempted to set Erlkönig in 1796, Heidenröslein. He made 4 sketches for that song. Rastlose Liebe. These are all immortal Schubert titles. And in 1803, he attempted to set Gretchen am Spinnrader. That is, a full 11 years before Schubert encountered the text and seemed to have discovered Goethe for the first time. The fact of the matter is that the only reason why these texts didn't become famous Beethoven compositions is that they remained sketches. There are people who have attempted to complete them. There are people who've attempted to fill in the gaps. Sometimes the sketches are quite minimal. Sometimes they're more developed. But in the case of these Beethoven settings of these famous poems, we know these titles from Schubert songs, Rastlose Liebe, Heidenröslein, Erlkönig, Gretchen am Spinnrader. And he knew they were wonderful poems to set to music, but he was a perfectionist. He couldn't make them work for him. And in a sense, it was almost like he was slightly out of joint with time, not being that wonderful post-Napoleonic period that Schubert found himself in, which was the dawning of an age of Romanticism. It was certainly the lubricant of Romanticism which enabled Schubert essentially to set some of these extraordinary poems. But Beethoven had tried before. He'd taken song very seriously. And the first song that we know of was when he was 11 or 12. It's called Schilderung eines Mädchens. And it's too high. It doesn't show any understanding of how the actual voice works. Well, Schubert made exactly the same problems when he was a young man. It's got a rather simple accompaniment, but a marvellous arpeggio to illustrate the night sky being illuminated. It shows that, basically, far from scorning the voice and poems, Beethoven regarded it as part of his, not obligation, but part of what a real composer did.
Schilderung eines Mädchens portrait of a young girl. You wish, my friend, that I should portray Elise for you. Would that the spirit of Urza would pour itself into me. Urza would paint her eyes like stars that glow in a winter's night.
Schilden willst du freien, soll ich dir erlesen. Möchte Mutzens Geist in mich sich ergießen. Wie in einer Winternacht Sterne strahlen, würde ihre Augenpracht böser malen.
Another important song from 1790 that makes Beethoven 20 is an elegy auf den Tod eines Pudels. Unknown poet, an elegy to a beloved dog, a pet, a poodle. And that shows signs of imitation from Beethoven's composition teacher, Christian Gottlob Neffer. Neffer was Beethoven's composition and piano general music teacher in Bonn. And this is a complicated song. It's a really lyrical song. By Schubertian standards, it's a little bit stiff, a little bit classical. It doesn't have the geniality of the great Mozart Lieder. It's earnest. The subject is somewhat ridiculous, of course. But it's still wonderful because, let me tell you, there are only a few dogs here and there in Schubert songs, and this is really a song about a dog.
Elegy auf den Tod eines Pudels. Elegy on the death of a poodle. Tears flow for you in a way they are shed seldom for friends. God gave you this great loyalty. You were so pure. You lived so briefly, but not in vain. But your death should not grieve me too much. You were a friend of laughter. My heart should not quarrel with fate. You live on and weave magic in my memories.
Stirb immerhin, es werden ja so viele der Freuden auf dir. Oft in sie welken in des Mittags Schwere, fällt schon der Tod sie ab zu mähen an. Auch meine Freunde, du, der flüssend zerren, wie Freunde. Schmerz um dich kann nicht mein Aug entehren, um dich geschöpft, geschaffen mich zu freuen. Du warst so rein von aller Tück und Fehle, als schwarz dein krauses Seidenhaar. Wie manchen Menschen kann dich dessen Seele so schwarz als deine Außenseite war. Trüb sind die Augenblicke unseres Lebens. Froh ward mir manchen nur durch dich.
Mensch von sich. Doch sollt ein Tod mich nicht zu sehr betrüben, du warst ja stets des Lachens Freund. Geliehen ist uns alles, was wir lieben. Kein Erdenglück bleibt lange unbeweint. Mein Herz soll nicht mit dem Verhängnis zanken, um eine Lust, die es verlor, du liebe fort und gaukle im Gedanken, wie fröhlich Erinnerungen vor. Du liebe fort und gaukle im Gedanken, wie fröhlich Erinnerungen vor.
In 1792, Beethoven wrote An Laura, a poem of Mattheson, Mattheson being a poet who very much exercised Schubert's imagination in 1814 and was an important Schubert poet. And this song was used very unscrupulously by Diabelli to make a 12th bagatelle and added it to an early edition of the opus, 119 bagatelles. So that's the sort of crookery that Diabelli associated himself with. Also, may I say, somewhat being rather dishonest when it came to dealing with Schubert.
An Laura, to Laura. Joy blooms around you on all paths, more beautiful than that which innocence ever found. Peace of mind, heaven's best blessing, flows against you like spring's breath until the reunion in robes of light. Smiling will the seraph float down who the palm of retribution carries from the dark valley to that everlasting life, your beautiful soul to raise where the judge our deeds weighs. Then ring God's grave scales. Enjoy yourself from any note of discord free, and the friend at your grave says, happy she. Your last days were a sunset in May.
Seelen Ruhe des Himmels Bestes. frei. Und dir Freund an deinem Grabe sage, glücklich Herr, die letzte deine Tage war ein Sonnenuntergang im Mai, war ein
Sometimes Beethoven wrote an early song and revised it later. And so in 1798, he composed Der Kuss, which is perhaps one of the songs that we most often hear on the concert platform today. And that was revised in 1822 and actually published as Opus 128. This rather ribald, slightly tasteless song sitting amidst the glories of the late string quartets in terms of the opus numbers. All rather strange.
Der Kuss, the kiss. I was with Chloe all alone, and I wished to kiss her, but she said she would scream, that it would be in vain. But I dared to, and I kissed her, despite her resistance. And did she scream? Oh, yes, she screamed, but not until long after.
Ich war bei Chloen ganz allein und küssen wollte ich sie und küssen, küssen, küssen wollte ich sie. Jedoch sie sprach, sie würde schreien, sie würde schreien, sie würde schreien, sie würde schreien. Es sei vergebne mir, vergebne mir, es sei vergebne, vergebne mir. Ich wagte es doch und küsste sie, trotz ihrer Gegenwehr, trotz ihrer Gegenwehr. Und schrie sie nicht. Jawohl, sie schrie, sie schrie. Doch lange hinterher, doch, ja doch, doch lange hinterher, sie schrie doch lange, 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 lange hinterher, hinterher, ja lange, lange hinterher.
Recycling of material happens sometimes. In 1794-5, Beethoven wrote an extraordinary, grandiose song called Seufzer eines Ungeliebten und Gegenliebter. And that is an extraordinary song because it has a huge dramatic recitative, followed by a tune that is slightly reminiscent of the Beethoven choral symphony tune, and indeed it was recycled in the choral fantasia for piano, chorus and voice. And if I just read you a bit of this poem, you'll see, sigh of one who is unloved. Have you not allotted love to the life of every creature? Why am I alone forgotten, O nature? Surely you are my mother too. Honeyed fruits never ripen for me from the sweetest shoots of desire, for alas, I lack that returned love which only one can grant me. That's all part of the recitative. And then this marvellous tune, if I could but know that you love and esteem me just a little, and that you feel just the tiniest part of what I feel for you, and so on. And here we hit a certain vein in Beethoven's songwriting, which is huge self-pity. It's a marvellous side of him because, you know, Brahms was rather similar in the sense that he allowed his own obsessions, his own emotional problems, his own psychological hang-ups to sometimes affect his choice of poem. And it's also, you know, that's where Brahms has something in common with Beethoven. It's the bachelor who is unloved. Well, that rather begs the question of why the bachelor is unloved. He's an extremely great genius who's very hard to love and very hard to establish a personal relationship with. But from time to time, we get these poems where we actually feel, as in the case of An die ferne Geliebte, that Beethoven feels that love is out of his reach. Like every other composer, he sometimes chooses poems for other loftier reasons, but very often he uses song in a way that Schubert very seldom does. I mean, we can trace a few very personal hang-ups to Schubert's songs, a hang-up about fathers, father's love, father's lack of love, which are reflected in song texts. But you never feel with Schubert that sort of tape of moribund and slightly, well, it's slightly banal self-pity, which sometimes encourages Beethoven not to choose the best texts, but to choose texts that actually reflect his feelings.
Seufzer eines Ungeliebten und Gegenliebe. Two poems joined into one in this Lied. Plaint of a Loveless Man and Requited Love. Did you not grant a share of love to the life of every creature? So why am I alone left out, I ask of you, my mother, nature? Is there in forest or in pen, in the air or in the sea, an animal that's without love? All find love except for me. Granted that in woodland pasture, mead, trees, mosses, plants in love, in mutual love combine, yet, bride, there is none that I call mine. From that, the sweetest of desires, no honeyed fruit ensues for me, for I do lack that mutual love that only one can grant, 'tis she. If you thought well of me, held me in some regard, if I but knew you felt some fraction of what I feel for you, to know my greeting is not taken amiss, that your lips enjoy both giving and getting a kiss. Then, O heavens, my heart would burst with joy. Your life and soul you shan't in vain destroy. Kindness shared increases kindness's power. Mutual loving feeds on love. And so what would remain a spark in ashes becomes a red-hot, fiery glow.
Hast du nicht Liebe zu bemessen, dem Leben jeder Kreatur? Auch meine Mutter, du, du Natur. Alles aus mir.
im Heil auf Flur und Matten sich Baum und Staude, Moos und Kraut durch Liebe und Gegenliebe gatten. Vermählt sich mir doch keine Braut, doch keine Braut. Durch Liebe und Gegenliebe gatten, vermählt sich mir doch keine Braut, doch keine Braut. Mir wächst vom Süßesten der Triebe nie Honigfrucht zur Lust heran, denn ach, mir
as a young man, Beethoven doing a great deal to respond to words. They're not always the greatest words, but you know, the same could be said about Mozart's Lieder. He only set one poem of Goethe, the Feilschen, And some of the other poetry is not of the highest level. But Beethoven does work his way stolidly and determinedly through the task. That's what you always think about Beethoven, isn't it? Determination, stamina, the brilliance of knowing that another sketch, another attempt, that this poem will submit, that this idea will be shaped. It doesn't flow graciously like bounty from heaven. It is hard-won material. And then, of course, there is a period where the songs really do flow marvellously. And at the centre of today's repertoire of famous Beethoven songs, there's one very early, it was 23, a Mattheson poem. Again, Mattheson, very musical poet, and, you know, not a hugely deep poet, no match for Goethe, but nevertheless a poet. And it's a cavatina in an operatic Italianate style, Adelaida. And, of course, Adelaida, which Schubert also had a go at setting many years later, and didn't win the race. Here, Beethoven's Adelaida remains the more distinguished contribution.
Adelaida. Your friend wanders alone in the garden of spring, gently bathed in lovely magical light, which shimmers through the swaying branches of flowers. Adelaida. In the reflection of the river, in the snows of the Alps, in the golden clouds of sinking day, in the fields of stars, thy face beams forth, Adelaida. Evening breezes whisper through the tender leaves. The silver bells at Maytime rustle in the grass. Waves roar and nightingales sing, Adelaida. Some day, O miracle, a flower will blossom upon my grave from the ashes of my heart. And clearly on every violet petal will shine, Adelaida.
Einsam wandelt dein Freund im Frühlingsgarten, mild von lieblichen Zauberlicht umflossen, das durch wankende Blütenzweige zittert. Spiegelnden Flut im Schnee der Alpen, in des sinkenden Tages Goldgewölke, im Gefilde der Sterne strahlt dein Bildnis, dein Bildnis. Goldgewölke im Gefilde der Sterne strahlt dein Bildnis, Adelaide. Wellen rauschen und nach
zarten Laube flüstern. Silberglöckchen des Mais im Grase säusen, Wellen rauschen und Nachtigallen flüten, und Nachtigallen flüten. Einst, o Wunder, es blüht auf meinem Grabe. O Wunder, es blüht auf meinem Grabe, eine Blume der Asche meines Herzens, die Asche meines Herzens, deutlich schimmert, deutlich schimmert, auf jedem Purpurblättchen, auf jedem Herzens, der Asche meines Herzens, deutlich schimmert, deutlich schimmert, auf jedem Purpurblättchen, auf jedem Purpurblättchen. Adelaide, Adelaide, deutlich schimmert, auf jedem Purpurblättchen, auf jedem Purpurblättchen. Adelaide, Adelaide. Adelaide.
Adelaida. And in the greatest possible contrast, Graham Johnson now tells us about the next song of Beethoven we'll be hearing.
In Questa Tomba Oscura is one of the most famous of the various settings in Italian that Beethoven set. He was only once in French, quite often in Italian, including settings of Metastasio, the librettist and also poet that Schubert encountered.
In questa tomba oscura, in this dark tomb, in this dark tomb, let me lie. You should have thought of me when I was alive, you ungrateful. At least leave naked spectres to enjoy their peace, and do not bathe their ashes with futile venom.
Lasciami riposare. tomba oscura, lasciami riposar. Quando vivevo ingrata, ingrata.
In questa tomba oscura. Like the previous Beethoven song we heard before, Adelaide, performed by Ian Bostridge, with Sir Antonio Papano accompanying him. And for this programme, Graham Johnson tells us about just one more Lied, one of Beethoven's settings of several poems by Christian Fürchtegott Gellert.
The Gellert Lieder, that incredible writer of fables and that famous moralist, a person who believed in restriction on people's activities so that they discipline, I think you would say, moral discipline is Gellert's strength, and the religiosity of these six mighty settings seem like they're carved out of stone. They've got something monumental about them, these Gellert songs. They're from 1802.
Bitten, plea. God, your goodness reaches so far as clouds float. You crown us with mercy and hurry to our aid. Lord, my castle, my rock, my shield, hear my plea. Listen to my words, for I will pray before you.
Voice of Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau there, singing Bitten, one of the six sacred songs which were settings of poems by Christian Gellert. John Talansky was in conversation in that programme with the accompanist and vocal scholar Graham Johnson. And John will be accompanied by tenor Ian Bostridge and mezzo-soprano Natalie Perez when he continues his discussions of Beethoven's songs next Sunday on The Lyric Feature at 6 p.m. The two-part series, Beethoven Songs and Rarities, is produced by John Talansky. If you're interested in Beethoven songs, we have up on our podcast feed a programme from a couple of months ago which looks at Beethoven's Irish folk songs. Search for the Lyric Feature podcast on the RTE Radio Player or on your podcast aggregator of choice.